a speech next by Professor David Skirbina, who I have known for over a decade now since we passed a resolution demanding that the University of Michigan divest, disinvest in anything that was supporting the Israeli occupation. And Professor Skirbina was with us, and we got that done. It was a small statement, but it was an important statement because, as you all know, the students who are here know, especially, you form your identity in those formative years at the college campuses. So whenever you see something happening on college, don't dismiss it. Support it. And thank you, Dr. Skirbina, for being there at the University of Michigan Dearborn as a professor of philosophy and supporting everything that we've ever stood for and taking, I have to say, personal sacrifices for speaking the truth. Thank you, and please welcome Dr. David Skirbina.
Thank you, Tarek. Thank everyone for coming today. This is a great great turnout. I'm glad everyone's here.
Are the lights on?
So as we know, of the many human rights abuses, on the planet today, none is more important than Israel's occupation and assault on Palestine. I need not detail the facts. You know them all too well. Israel is a racist, apartheid, criminal state. They are hated and despised around the world. Every year at the United Nations General Assembly, over one dozen resolutions are passed by overwhelming margins condemning the Jewish state. We should take heart. The world is with us. I'm here today to briefly discuss actions that we can take and that we are taking to relieve suffering in Palestine. I come to you not as an Arab, not as a Muslim, certainly not as a Jew, but rather as a professor of philosophy and of ethics, and as an advocate for justice. I teach many ethics courses at the U of M Dearborn, and I cannot lecture about that topic without also doing something about it. It may surprise you to learn that the University of Michigan is not an innocent bystander. U of M, which is a public institution, is currently investing in and profiting from Israeli crimes in Palestine. Let me explain. U of M has a huge pool of money called an endowment, which currently stands at about $9 billion. Several million dollars of this money is invested in corporations that sell military hardware or provide other support to the Jewish state. In fact, most of the weapons that Israel uses against Palestine are made in the USA. Every time Israel fires a missile or drops a cluster bomb, some US corporation profits, and so do all of its shareholders. It's grossly unethical for U of M to own such stocks. This brings us to the issue of divestment. For 10 years, I have been working with faculty and students to raise awareness of the situation and to ask them to support a call for the university to divest from Israel. Divestment is very simple. It involves selling stocks and bonds of companies that support Israeli crimes. It costs us nothing. It is the least we can do. U of M has divested twice before. In 1978, they divested from apartheid South Africa. Ultimately, apartheid South Africa disappeared, and a new nation, a democracy of all its people, was created. The second divestment occurred in 2000, when the university divested from tobacco stocks. We realized then that investments in products that kill people are unethical, and thus we sold those stocks. Today it is time for a third divestment. Certainly the situation in Palestine is at least as urgent as it was in South Africa. Certainly it is at least as important as tobacco stocks. we have no excuse not to act. There is some good news here. Support for divestment is growing among students and faculty every year. We currently have over 1,400 student signatures and over 100 faculty signatures in support of divestment. Just this past April, U of MD faculty nearly approved an historic resolution calling for divestment. We hope it passes next year. On to wider issues. It has been said that we are all Palestinians. In a sense, this is true. The same forces and the same powers that work against Palestine work against us all. Let me repeat that. The same forces and the same powers that work against Palestine work against us all. It does not matter if we are Lebanese or Syrian or Iraqi or Italian or German or just plain American. In a very real sense, we are all Palestinians. That's why this is so important. Catastrophe in Palestine demands action. Let's look at what our government is doing and what our media is doing, and let's see then what we can do to help. Consider first our federal government. I know that some of you are immigrants to this country. Some of you came here for democracy. I'm sorry to inform you, you came to the wrong place. There is no democracy here. Here we have rule by the wealthy, the well-connected, and the political lobbies. In the face of this great humanitarian crisis, our federal government is completely unconcerned about Palestinian suffering. In fact, Congress does everything possible to aid the Israelis in their crimes. It takes every opportunity to act on their behalf. Just last week, on July 18, the Senate passed, by unanimous consent, Resolution S-498, This resolution expresses unconditional support for Israel. It makes no mention of the violations of international law or the illegal settlements. It makes no mention of Israel's torture of and abuse of innocent Palestinians or its long-standing violations of the Geneva Conventions. The resolution demands that Palestinians dissolve their recently formed unity government as if we have the right to tell them how to govern themselves. The resolution's 79 formal signatories include our own two Michigan senators, Carol Levin and Debbie Stabenow. You might want to call them to express your opinion. And then consider the money that we give to Israel. As many of you know, our government, using our tax dollars, provides over $3 billion of direct aid every year to the Jewish state. Additionally, we provide $2 to $3 billion of indirect aid in such things as loan guarantees, interest-free loans, early payments, and so on. Thus, we give up to $6 billion to Israel every year as foreign aid. This comes to roughly $1,000 for every Jewish man, woman, and child in Israel every year from your tax dollars. But $6 billion is evidently not enough for our generous congressmen. In addition, the Pentagon budget contains $621 million per year specifically for Israel's Iron Dome rocket system. But with the latest crisis, even that is not enough for our friends in Tel Aviv. It seems that Israel is firing so many interceptor missiles that their supply is running low. So they requested and are about to receive an emergency aid package of another $225 million to restock their inventory. President, what is President Obama doing in this crisis in Palestine? When he was elected, they called Obama a man of the people. He has indeed proven himself to be a man of the people, but only certain people, only the chosen people. If you are one of the chosen people, Obama offers you the full economic, diplomatic, and military might of the United States. If you are like us, not the chosen people, he offers you only empty words like hope and change and yes, we can. Why do they do such things? Why does Obama supplicate himself to Jewish interests? Why does Congress willingly fund the Israeli criminals and thereby make us all complicit in war crimes? We know the answer. The Jewish lobby, otherwise known as the Israel lobby. Of the hundreds of lobbies in Rome, Washington, the richest and most powerful one is the Jewish lobby. They give the most campaign money. They are the most aggressive. They are the most shameless. They spare no expense in supporting their friends and in attacking their enemies. Congress and the president live in fear of the Jewish lobby. Hence, they are all too happy to comply with their demands. What about the media? What are they doing in the face of this humanitarian crisis? The news media is of particular importance here. Their job is to present the facts in a proper context in an objective and unbiased manner. They also have an obligation to root out corruption in government and industry. But when it comes to Palestine, none of these obligations hold. Instead, we get open defense of the Israeli position. In our national news media, we hear from Jewish pundits and Jewish reporters about the problems that Israel faces and how it is simply defending itself from the terrorist threat of Hamas. We don't hear that Palestinians are exercising their universal right to self-defense. We don't hear that Israel has stolen new land, driven 800,000 people from their homes, and now imprisons 1.8 million in Gaza. Media. What about Hollywood? As you well know, Hollywood has long portrayed Arabs and Muslims in a negative light. By contrast, Jews or Israelis are never portrayed in a negative light. When they are mentioned at all, they are portrayed as helpless and innocent victims of some malevolent force, such as Muslim extremists or malicious Arabs or evil Nazis. Every strong and independent Arab leader is portrayed as the new Hitler. Hollywood producers turn out an endless stream of anti-Muslim, pro-Jewish films. Even today, 70 years after World War II, we see Nazi-themed movies on a regular basis. Even today, movie producers attempt to scare us by resurrecting tales of the Holocaust. The Holocaust, an event that even today, 70 years later, is a quagmire of unanswered questions. And yet for Hollywood, World War II is so important that we need to be continuously reminded of it. Let me come to the question now of what we can do. Here are three things that you can do. One, send letters to U of M Dearborn and U of M Ann Arbor demanding that they divest from apartheid Israel. Two, identify and boycott Zionist products, Zionist services, and Zionist corporations. Three, contact your congressmen, your senators, and your candidates for office and ask them one question. What will you do to stop the Israel lobby? In closing, 400 years ago, William Shakespeare wrote a play called The Merchant of Venice. It was about a greedy, immoral Jewish moneylender, Shylock, who used his economic wealth to threaten the life of a Venetian nobleman. If Shakespeare were alive today, he would write a different play. It would be called The Merchant of Death. It would be about a Jewish political leader, Bibi Netanyahu, who chose to rain death and misery upon an innocent people in the name of self-defense. It would be about a political party, Likud, and an ideology, Zionism. It would be about a complicit nation, the United States,
It would be about a wealthy and corrupting political power, the Jewish lobby, who used their economic wealth to thrust nations into war and to destroy innocent people by the thousands. At the end of Shakespeare's play, Shylock suffers defeat and forfeits his wealth. He is thereby rendered harmless. There is a lesson here for us all. As long as we allow the wealth of the Jewish lobby to circulate unchecked, there will be no peace. Only when we restrict that economic power through our own human political willpower is there a chance for peace. Only when the wealthy lobbyists are deprived of their means of control will they cease to be a menace to the world. The merchants of death will not succeed. In the end, they will suffer defeat. In the end, those who pursue true peace and true justice will triumph. In the end, the racist, warmongering, apartheid state will disappear, and something new, something better, will take its place. It is only a question of time.